from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, the first round of San Francisco election results gives Interim Mayor Ed Lee a commanding lead. Now, voters' second and third choices will determine the next mayor, district attorney, and sheriff. But City Elections Chief John Arntz is fielding questions about the wisdom of ranked choice voting.
The one issue that's come forward this election, more so than any other election that we've run the ranked choice, is ranked choice the proper way to elect our office holders?
Coming up, did ranked choice voting live up to its promises? And what do Tuesday's election results say about where the city is heading? We'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, the votes are still being tabulated from yesterday's ranked choice election in San Francisco, and it's going to take several days to sort out who the next mayor, district attorney, and sheriff will be. But some things are already clear, including the fact that Interim Mayor Ed Lee's lead will be tough to overcome as voters' second and third choices are tabulated under ranked choice. Ed Lee leading after that first round of vote counting with 31% of the vote, followed by Supervisor John Avalos at 18.6%, and Dennis Herrera, the city attorney, in third place with 11%. This hour, we're going to examine the election results so far, as well as the process used to determine the winners. We have a lot of guests to hear from this hour, and of course, we want to hear from you as well. But we begin here in the studio with Corey Cook. He's assistant professor of politics and director of the Leo McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good at the University of San Francisco. Good morning, Corey
Cook. Good morning.
Also with me, David Lee. He's executive director of the Chinese American Voters Education Committee. David Lee, good to see you as well.
Good morning.
Let me begin with just a general question for each of you. I'll start with you, David. Overall impressions of this election, big picture.
It was a historic election. For Chinese Americans who have waited for over 100 years to have a say in city government, the election of Ed Lee as its first Chinese American mayor is tremendous, and the turnout bears that out. Look at the Chinese voter turnout amongst absentee voters all across the city, and this is truly an election where the Chinese American voting population made the difference.
Of course, we should say he's not the mayor yet. He's ahead with 31%. But do you agree with what the mayor and others said last night that that's an insurmountable lead?
I believe he's going to win this election. And I believe that this community, the Chinese American community, feels enormous pride and is celebrating in the streets that he has won this election.
And, of course, he wasn't the only Asian-American on the ballot for mayor. There were four others, including Jeff Adachi, David Chu, and others. Was the pride sort of across the board, or was it really focused on the fact that, hey, we're going to put one of our own in the mayor's office?
Well, I think the community has waited for such a long time. And then to find in this election a wealth of choices of qualified Asian-American, Chinese-American candidates running led to record numbers registering to vote, voting, turning out to vote by absentee. Typically, the Chinese-American community votes below the citywide average. And in this election, it was well above the citywide average. And I think clearly it made a huge difference to the winner.
Corey Cook, what about you? What stands out for you about yesterday's election?
I think David's exactly right about the historic nature of the race. If it turns out that there's a remarkable comeback for John Avalos, he'll be the city's first Latino mayor. So I think in either case, it's going to be an historic election. We polled the race. The University of San Francisco did a poll with the Bay Citizen about a month ago, and there are some things we found in that that I think bared themselves out in this race. The enormous interest in the Chinese community, the general apathy among the rest of the population, which I think the low turnout, but the spike of turnout in Chinese communities that we saw, that the race was largely about Ed Lee. That as soon as he got into the race, it became framed around Ed Lee, and his high approval ratings really gave him a huge advantage in the race. I mean, he was clearly the front runner. I think the third thing we found that didn't get as much attention was that Edley won every demographic grouping. He won every ideological grouping with one exception: people who thought he wasn't doing a good job and progressives like John Avalos. And Avalos was at the time polling, I don't even remember, 7 or 8% of the vote.
Avalos, the only true progressive among the top tier candidates.
He was. And I think it's amazing how much actually – so I think what happened was I think from my sense, Edley – most of the polls that were done in the race, public polls like ours or the private ones, had Edley somewhere between 28% and 35% for the entire time. And just didn't budge. But what did budge was John Avalos came, largely out of nowhere with a grassroots campaign where he really garnered a lot of the progressive vote. And so I think it really did sort of align behind him. Now, I tend to agree that if he were to win this, it would be even more remarkable than Gene Kwan's victory in Oakland and is highly unlikely. But even for him to have emerged with 18% of the vote is a pretty remarkable thing from even a month ago.
And just explain why it would be so remarkable. I mean, Edley, you could say he got 31% of the vote, but, that means that my math is terrible.
69%
voted against him.
Right.
So why would it be so remarkable for him to lose?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is that historically we've had 54 ranked choice elections in the Bay Area, and four of them have switched from somebody other than first place winning. The vast majority of the time, the person that's in first place actually increases their vote share as each round is tallied. So part of the reason that they're front runners is because they do well on people's second and third choices too. And if you look at the way the ranked choice ballots, the system works, is they eliminate the 16th candidate and they reallocate those votes, and then the 15th and the 14th and so on. And if you look at the other candidates and you say, well, what'll happen when Leland Z's votes are reallocated and David Chu's votes reallocated and Michele Aliotto-Pierre's votes reallocated, and a lot of those are likely, again, in our polls and from what we sense, actually probably Mayor Lee is going to be more likely to get more of those votes than John Avalos will. Now, ultimately, I think it could, in fact, tighten up. It would be interesting to see where Dennis Herrera's votes go. But what's unique about San Francisco compared to that Oakland race is that voters historically don't. In Oakland, 80% of voters ranked all three of their choices in that race. In San Francisco, the number is much lower. It's somewhere between 50 and 60% in races rank all three. So there are a lot more discontinued ballots.
Why do you think
typically.
That is? Any thoughts?
I think it's the nature of the San Francisco electorate. I think that in Oakland, Don Parada was the lightning rod, and the other three candidates in the race could say anybody but Don Parada, and we're relatively okay with who we are. In this race, for John Avalos to have said, hey, I'm going to run as a team with Dennis Herrera, actually would have undermined John Avalos' support among progressive voters. It, the San Francisco electorate, to me, is so heterogeneous and so diverse ideologically, politically, and otherwise that it's hard for these sort of coalitions to form. And as a result, you don't see these sort of, let's run as a team together sort of ideas.
David Lee, yeah.
Also, this voters in San Francisco are much more diverse than in Oakland in terms of the number who speak other language, Chinese, Spanish, Russian. And it's taken a lot more to educate them about ranked choice voting. Our organization, nonprofit organization, spent a third of our budget this year producing bilingual brochures on ranked choice voting, sending them out to voters, doing trainings in the community.
And trying to get people to vote by mail early.
Vote by mail, but particularly around ranked choice voting. How do you choose three candidates instead of just one?
And I remember talking to you before the election, and you said that for many immigrant voters, they tend to bullet vote and vote for just one, or in the case of ranked choice voting, perhaps vote for the same person three times, which, as you pointed out, is, you're throwing away two votes, really.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because as we've seen with this election cycle, as much as we do in outreach, education, there's still people at the last minute who walk up to us and say, we don't get it. We don't understand what's going on here. And they still wonder, whether their vote actually counted. And so when you have these kind of lingering questions, you just wonder how much more can be done to educate people.
Corey Cook, there are many supporters of ranked choice voting. We'll be hearing from at least one of them later in the hour. But, they say, you don't have to understand the algorithm. You don't need to understand what happens mathematically, which is good for me but and others, I'm sure. But what do you say to that?
I think that's generally correct. You don't need to understand the mechanics of what happens, but you do need to appreciate that the results are legitimate. And I think one of the real challenges that Jean Kwan has had in Oakland is a perception that she didn't actually win the election, but that she somehow, you know, gamed the system. And you talk to relatively savvy, politically savvy people who say, you know, on election night, she was down 12 points on election night. It then tightened to 9 as they counted provisional ballots and the other absentees came in. But, you know, for 3 or 4 days, she had lost by 9% of the vote. And then suddenly the newspaper says, oh, by the way, she won. And a lot of voters didn't say, well, the reason she won was because actually she was more preferred. And what happened was they went to the tallies. And ultimately, if you look at the ballots, I mean, she was on, you know, 8 or 9% more ballots than Don Prado was even on.
That was her strategy.
And that was how the campaign was won. And she actually she beat him head to head. She was more preferred by voters. But if you talk to voters in Oakland, I think that they look at her election as being somehow not as legitimate had it been another, you know, a voting system that they're more familiar with. And I think that's problematic. Oh. They may not need to know the algorithm, but they do need to know that that this is an accurate and effective system of aggregating voters' preferences. And if they don't feel that way, that's a significant issue.
Well, and Corey's pointed out a flaw that many people say that in all voting systems have some flaw, but this is one that's unique to ranked choice voting, which is the legitimacy of your vote. Does an elected official, particularly of a big city, mayor of a big city, have the mandate he or she needs to lead if a year after the election people are still questioning the legitimacy of her election?
Let me ask you about something you mentioned at the beginning, David, I think, or maybe it was Corey, that the low turnout in this election, it's about 31%, which I haven't looked at the historical figures, but that's got to be on the low end for a competitive mayoral race in November, right, Corey?
It's very low. It'll tick upward, though, still. There are a lot of ballots still out there, and so my guess is it'll get closer to 40 than 30 when all the ballots are in. So there's still some vote counting.
So ballots that arrived on election day.
Ballots that arrived on election day, provisional ballots. And so part of the reason I'm, you know, I think the margin is pretty significant in the mayoral election, but part of the reason I'm a little hesitant, one is that I learned my lesson from Oakland last year, but two is that it could get tighter as the other remaining ballots are tallied. But it's going to be closer, I think, to 40%, but still that's on the low end. And one of the arguments that's made about ranked choice voting is that, you know, when we have the old system of voting in San Francisco was a November election and a December runoff. And oftentimes, particularly in races, you know, when the off-year elections, when you have no mayoral election and no congressional election, no presidential election, these the city attorney year, that you would have December runoffs with 16-17% of the vote. And so, you know, the argument was what a huge drop off it was between November and December. And oftentimes that was the case. In mayoral elections, actually, the turnout was historically higher in December runoffs than in November. And I think, you know, folks are going to be I always caution people against saying how would this election have played out under a different voting system, because the race would have been entirely different. The contest would have been different. And so I think it's a little bit, you know, erroneous to then say who would have won if we tallied the votes differently, who might have won. But I do think there are folks who are going to be looking at this saying, you know, if we had a December runoff, turnout likely would have been higher. There would have been greater differentiation against the candidates, amongst the candidates. And I think, you know, a lot of progressives right now are probably looking at this outcome saying, you know, it might have been interesting to see a John Avalos against Ed Lee in December and a month to run.
Or a Dennis Herrera, who might have appealed to the middle even more.
Right, and who might have been, you know, been the second choice under that scenario.
And I got this a lot. I teach political science at San Francisco State, and my students couldn't digest the number of candidates. They wanted it seemed to them information overload. They got too many messages, too many candidates. They want to focus.
But is that really because of ranked choice voting, or could it also be in part because of public financing of this election, that a lot of candidates thought, you know, between those two factors, gee, I can get some money from the city if I run. And with ranked choice voting, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, the combination of the two led to 16 candidates running with 8 of them viable under public finance, spending millions of dollars on campaign mailers, ads, and then you factor in the independent expenditure committees, and you're talking about a massive expenditure to the voter. It's a bombardment of messages, and people tune off.
And Corey, let's also not forget that Ed Lee jumped in at the last minute,
right,
and a lot of people were in because they thought it was going to be a wide open
race.
I agree. I
don't think ranked choice voting is related to the number of candidates in the race. I think it's two things. It's one, that the candidates declared they got in the race, they accepted public financing, and they were in the race before Ed Lee got in. A lot of those candidates then became just not viable. including
and
citywide
officials.
And they
couldn't drop really, out, really, because under public financing, they would pay the money back.
Exactly right. And so I think a lot of it was this odd nature of the race, of a completely wide-open race, and, you know, a real, really deep bench. I mean, you're looking at, you know, when you look at the results, Jeff Adachi in his last election got 200,000 votes. And he's, you know, right now sitting at about, I think, 9,000. You know, Phil Ting in his last election got over 100,000 votes. He's sitting at less than 1,000. Dennis Herrera got over 100,000 votes. So you have citywide elected officials. This is an incredibly deep field of really exceptional candidates. And so I think part of it is, you know, really this, San Francisco, as probably your listeners are firmly aware, has a pretty narrow ideological space. And so the gap between the most right-wing candidate in this race was either, you know, Tony Hall or Michaela Alliot-Appiah, and the most left-wing candidate in the race, John Avalos, is a pretty narrow gap on a national scale. And you then stick, you know, 16 candidates in between that gap, 11 of whom I believe are current or former elected officials, and it gets very muddied for voters.
Well, and your point about public finance, in a typical election without public finance, most of these candidates wouldn't even be able to raise money to run an effective campaign. Here you have, with public finance, some, at least 11 candidates running very real campaigns. And I think voters on the receiving end of that just got bombarded with mail, with phone messages, with commercials. And I really wonder if that is healthy.
David Lee, he is the executive director of the Chinese American Voters Education Committee and a professor of political science at San Francisco State. Also with us this morning, Corey Cook, assistant professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. We're talking, of course, about yesterday's election, and we will not really know the final results, at least for these executive offices, sheriff, district attorney, and mayor, for probably a couple of days as the ranked choice voting sorts itself out. Yesterday at the Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Mark Farrell introduced a charter amendment to undo ranked choice voting, an interesting move on election day before the votes are even cast, much less counted. But let's hear what he had to say.
People are confused about how to vote and how ranked choice voting really, really works. People should be spending time thinking about who to vote for, what to vote for. I don't think people should be spending time thinking about how to vote and how their vote's going to be really counted.
Corey Cook, again, Mark Farrell, among others, Sean Ellsburn also raising concerns about this. To what extent do you think this is, I don't know, there are legitimate questions, but is there something else at work here? For example, you know, the media seems not to like ranked choice voting for some reason. Any thoughts about that?
I think these are legitimate questions. I think we constantly question our election systems. You know, I think there is evidence, and certainly my research and research of other academics shows disparities in terms of who makes mistakes that can invalidate their ballots. I think you know, the issues that have been raised in Oakland are legitimate ones about whether voters view the outcomes as legitimate outcomes. I think you know, of the 15 races that have gone to ranked choice balloting, 13 of them, the person didn't ultimately win a majority of the election. They got a majority of the continuing ballots, but didn't actually win a majority in the election, which creates difficulties for them to build a governing coalition. I think these are all legitimate questions. I should also say that I beg Supervisor Farrell not to put it on the ballot, because this is what I study. And so I was on a panel with him and said, please don't take this away from us academics who study this.
You love it.
It's my research, so I need to keep it. But I think that I do think the concerns are legitimate. I think it's legitimate that you know, we treat absentee ballots and election day ballots differently. If you make a mistake in the polling place, your ballot comes back to you, and you can repair your mistake. If you're an absentee voter and you make an error, your ballot's more likely to be discontinued or invalidated. I think those are significant issues. You know, they can be mitigated, but these are significant issues. Politically, I think the big difference now, though, is that, you know, historically progressives have liked this in San Francisco, and I do think progressives now are looking at Ross McCreamy's race for sheriff, and they're looking at the mayoral election and saying, you know, is this actually doing what we thought it might politically, and might there might not be a new coalition around repealing it?
Well, I want to bring in now Stephen Hill, who is one of the architects of San Francisco's ranked choice voting policy. Stephen Hill, good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
You've been listening, and I know you're a very ardent supporter of this. You've heard some of the criticism. It's confusing. It didn't do what it said it was going to do in terms of progressive voters and candidates. What are your thoughts about it? How do you think it worked? I think I know the answer, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it worked well. It, you know, you had someone who was a clear front runner for ever since he jumped into the race, and he's remained a front runner, and now, we'll, you know, it looks like he's very close to being elected, first Chinese American mayor in San Francisco's history, joining the first Chinese American mayor in Oakland's history. So it seems to me that, you know, I mean, it's always good to look at ways to make ranked choice voting better, and certainly we could have more rankings, for example, and there's steps moving forward to make that happen. But by and large, it did what it's supposed to do. It got the election over in a single election. It produced a winner with a clear mandate. And, you know, I mean, if people say, well, his first number of first rankings was is kind of low, so maybe that's not a clear mandate, but he would have had that same low first total and if you'd had a second election, a December runoff, for example. And even if we had a December runoff, you still would have had a big field of candidates. Historically, San Francisco has always had big field of candidates even before ranked choice voting.
In a runoff?
And pardon?
Not in a runoff.
No, but in the first election. And so in this election, you still would have had a hard time figuring out, you know, discerning which candidate to vote for with your single vote instead of having three rankings with your single vote in order to decide which candidate gets in to the runoff. And you would have seen these five Asian candidates, for example. Instead of Asian voters being able to rank three of them, and avoid the type of split votes that have happened in Asian communities in the past before ranked choice voting, you would have seen voters having to, you know, their one vote having to figure out which of these Asian candidates to vote for, and so the Asian candidates would have had to start attacking each other in order to be the front runner that wins that Asian vote, and so the dynamics of the race would have been quite different, and I think in a way that voters would have found to be a real turnoff because the amount of mudslinging and negative campaigning would have gone through the roof.
But what about the argument that a runoff in December and mayoral runoff turnout has been higher than the general election, according to Corey Cook? But, you know, wouldn't it be better for voters to have had a clear choice between, say, Ed Lee and Dennis Herrera or John Avalos? Wouldn't it be much easier to discern the differences between two candidates as opposed to 16?
The problem is that historically, when San Francisco had December runoffs, you didn't get a clear choice because you had two candidates. But instead, you know, you think back to the 1999 mayor runoff. Between Willie Brown and Tom Amiano, where the independent expenditures went through the roof, and that was even before the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, which is going to allow independent expenditures to be even more excessive. The candidates just proceeded to trash the heck out of each other. All voters heard was what's wrong about their future mayor or any other office holder, depending on what office you're electing, as the candidates savaged each other, not what's good about the candidates or what their policies
but let
are,
me,
because
let me
once
stop.
It gets down to you against me, it just turns into a negative slugfest.
Well, but if you look at the last few weeks of the campaign, I mean, there was a lot of mud slung mostly, almost entirely, really, in the direction of Ed Lee.
Sure. I mean, no electoral system gets rid of that entirely, but it gets much worse in a face-off with a December runoff election. And it did historically. As I said, the independent expenditures went through the roof, and voters really didn't learn anything new about the candidates. They just learned everything bad about their future mayor.
All right. Stephen Hill, thanks so much for joining us this morning, a political writer.
Well, can I just say one other thing?
Real quick, because we're coming up to a break.
Sure. The other thing that people should know is that since ranked choice voting has gone into place in 2004, the number of supervisors who are now from minority communities has doubled from 4 to 8, and there are 4 Asian Americans. We now have elected our first Chinese American mayor. So for those who are saying that people are confused and aren't figuring out how to do this, usually they're talking about minority communities. If it's been so bad for minority communities, how is it that they have doubled their representation on the Board of Supervisors and now have elected Chinese American mayor for the first time? There's a disconnect there that just doesn't make sense.
All right. Stephen Hill, thanks so much for joining us. We've got much more in the half an hour ahead. And you're welcome to join us. Give us a call at 866-733-6786 or email us at forum@kqed.org. You can also post a comment or question on our website, kqed.org/forum, or go to our Facebook page as well. Coming up in the next half hour, Willie Brown, among others. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. We're talking about yesterday's San Francisco election and the results that continue to be known throughout the week as ranked choice voting kicks in. If you want to join us this morning, give us a call at 866-733-6786. And joining us now, someone who is not on the ballot yesterday, but you wouldn't know it from some of the campaign literature and TV ads, Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco. Mr. Mayor, good to have you with us.
Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I suspect you are too. You had a big celebration tonight, last night rather, celebrating Ed Lee's victory. What do you think it means?
Wait a minute. Not just celebrating Ed Lee's victory. The party was, thank God, the election's over.
I think a lot of the candidates certainly shared that sentiment.
Yes.
So what do you think, a lot of people are talking about the, finally Asian American community and the voters in this city have arrived. Do you think that's what the message of that election is last night?
No, not really. I think it is a confirmation of where I believe Asian Americans have been in this city for a very long time. After all, Scott, I must tell you that I probably have been the beneficiary of Asian votes like no other non-Asian in the history of San Francisco. And it's always been a very active community, financially given. It's been an active community from the standpoint of people participating in doorbell ringing and all the other things that go with that. And it's been an active community with the network of family associations that affords you the opportunity to literally do politicking when everybody else in the city is asleep. And so it's not a surprise to me at all. It's simply a confirmation.
Let me ask you, as I mentioned, I was joking, but there was truth. You were a target of a lot of the criticism from either named or unnamed by name, people saying that you basically, along with others, Rose Pack, for example, signed, sealed, and delivered Ed Lee to the voters and assuring his election by announcing that changing his mind at the last minute. Is the criticism fair that, that a machine basically put him in place and that you're driving the machine?
No, it's not fair, and it's not accurate. That's a tactic that's always used by people who cannot attack the candidate directly. Ed Lee's credentials were impeccable. Started out as a lawyer representing people who needed representation against the establishment, Human Rights Commission director.
But this is a guy who never thought about being mayor until he got a phone call, I think, from Rose Pack in Hong Kong.
Well, but that's part of how many times you get in the world of politics. It's about time we got somebody who had no ambition and no ego to be in politics, but if there are a collection of people out there who says, we really think you ought to do it, we need your kind of leadership. And that's what Ed Lee brought to the table. And it was frankly difficult to convince him that he should actually undertake the awesome task of running for public office. I'm sure that with all of the attacks, and I got to tell you, there's no other candidate that has been attacked as much as Ed Lee, except maybe my own candidacy over two times, once with Amiano and once with Frank Jordan. I have never seen the onslaught of negative mail as prolific as it was against Ed Lee. I'm sure that he was very upset with those of us who urged him to participate. And I think that he's going to be better for it in the end. Many of the people who did those negative shots, I'm sure, are going to have trouble readjusting, because it's not like taking a negative shot at Willie Brown, who's running. That happens every day, and for 40 years, that's what I looked forward to.
Well, let me ask you a question. One of the most vocal critics was Dennis Herrera, the city attorney, who questioned the entire Central Subway project. He, of course, is the mayor's attorney and advises city agencies and the Board of Supervisors. Now, if Willie Brown were mayor, I suspect there'd be a price to pay for that. Should there be?
Let me start out by telling you the canons of ethics makes it very clear that your lawyer, if they represent you, must never have a conflict of interest. I believe that the city attorney in this particular situation had a conflict of interest and has a conflict of interest. There's no way any person or in city government, an agency head, is going to be comfortable dealing with the city attorney now, obviously, if Ed Lee wins, because you don't know at what point the city attorney is going to be giving you advice that is good for the city. Or is the city attorney giving you advice that may be the touchstone and the platform for that city attorney's future ambition to run against your administration? That's just the reality of life. And my guess is that Dennis Herrera is going to have some real difficulty convincing people in city government. I also think that this may be the foundation for reforms. the one office that you may make impossible to continue to hold if you're running is city attorney. You decide to run for some other office, you probably should resign your job, period. If you remember, Scott, when I would make appointments to boards and commissions, if people decided to run for public office, the day they filed, they had to resign from that commission because I did not want their conduct and their agency and their commissionship in any manner tainted with conflict.
So we're getting an ethics lecture from Willie Brown. That's interesting.
And that's because that's how I have survived all these years. As a matter of fact, Scott, go back and look at the record. Dennis Herrera was my president of the police commission when he decided to run for city attorney. I supported him for city attorney. I made it very clear to him that if he signed on for city attorney as a candidate, he had to resign as president of the police commission. He did exactly that.
All right. Before I let you go, I just want to ask you a quick question. There was a column in Bay Citizen this week accusing you of the same things that you're accusing Dennis Herrera of, which is sort of skating around conflicts of interest with your column in the San Francisco Chronicle, mentioning people in that column and issues that are helpful to your paying clients without disclosing that. What's your reaction to that criticism?
First and foremost, it's very, very sloppy reporting. If that individual, whomever he is or she is, has any issue with me, they should take it up. I've been inspected by everybody under the sun. I do not work for the San Francisco Chronicle as a journalist. You know that, and we all know that. You know, I'm not a journalist. I am a columnist, an opinionated person.
All right.
And I talk about anybody I want to talk about at any time, under any circumstances. And anybody that has a problem with that, they ought to take it up with the Chronicle.
All right. Willie Brown, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Take care.
All right. Bye.
All right. Let's see. I guess let me bring in a listener, because we've got a lot of folks here who want to talk with us this morning. But first, actually, before I do that, Corey Cook, you've been listening to the former mayor here. Anything jump out at you about him? I love the ethics lecture.
Classic Mayor Brown. I mean, I think, you know, it was – I think we've seen a lot in the last a couple of days, and you know, the victory party last night, right after at his party, right after Ed Lee spoke, he invited Ron Conway up on stage, which I think was
a Republican businessman
who funded one of the independent committees. I thought that was, you know, sort of a fascinating political move. I think at the same time, the attacks against Ed Lee that linked him to Willie Brown don't work, because Willie Brown remains one of the most popular elected officials in the city, and you sort of get a sense why. On the one hand, he's giving ethics lectures, and you know, sort of classic Willie Brown. You know?
He's got a lot of charisma and chutzpah.
That's right.
Fair to
say.
Right. Let's go to the phones. Daniel is on the line, calling from Alamo Square in San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Yes, ethics lesson from Willie Brown. That's amazing. I wish you'd actually asked him about ranked choice voting. I think it's pretty clear that he would have said he's against it, that it's confusing for the electorate. All of the smokescreen that goes up from the establishment when we discuss ranked choice voting, which in my opinion and many people's opinion is a step closer to true democracy. And when we get into issues like Nader stealing votes from Gore in 2000, those are issues that are directly addressed by ranked choice voting. And if the only thing that is keeping this from working is education, then it's worth it.
All right. I'm sorry to cut you off. We've got a lot of other calls that want to weigh in, so thank you for the comment. I appreciate that. Let's go to Robert now in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. My question is regarding ranked choice voting. I was wondering if the system could not be improved by including weighting in the preferences for the second tally, so that the choice of my preferences is still maintained with each successive tally. Thank you.
Yeah, Corey Cook, I know that in some cities, they rank, if not all the candidates, more than three, which is what they also do for the Academy Awards. Actually, all 10 films get ranked 1 to 10, and that is a fairer way of doing it.
It is. Portland, Maine, actually, just ran an election yesterday that allowed voters to rank all of their choices. There's some limits on that in California, which is
the equipment
and the size of the ballot, because we we require the ballot to be at a certain type of font, and the result would be, you know, this election would have been probably 6 or 8 pages long just in the mayoral election.
Yeah.
But what I think what the caller's talking about is more preferential voting, where voters would have an opportunity to say, you know, rank candidates from 1 to 10 or vote for all the candidates you like, which actually is more, I think, what they're talking about, where you can actually say of each of the candidates, let me give them a score as opposed to just their rank order.
Well, I would just add that, in fact, in the results that we've seen, a lot of voters don't rank all three of their choices. In fact, they just vote for one candidate. I think in this election, we're going to be looking very closely to see how many exhausted ballots there are.
Meaning how many people who didn't really get a vote in the final choice.
Final choice and people who didn't choose three candidates,
yeah.
That they only voted for one.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off. I want to change gears a little bit because there were other things on the ballot, one of which was Proposition H, which is an advisory measure to change the school assignment system so that kids in San Francisco are assigned to schools closest to their homes. And that measure is narrowly ahead, 50.8% to 49.2%. That may change. The outcome may change by the time all the provisional ballots and late ballots are counted. But I want to bring in one of the supporters of that measure, Omar Khalif, is a parent, co-chair of Families for Neighborhood Schools. Mr. Khalif, thanks for joining us. What do you think about the vote? What were people saying yesterday?
Good morning. Well, a lot of people are excited that it was able to pass. So a lot of people were really excited because when you have, a grassroots effort or a group of a small band of people and just writing clear and logical policy statements, and, you know, a lot of people said it was real clear to read and understand, so therefore they voted for it, and they just couldn't understand why San Francisco would still have such a student assignment process that sends children to all over to San Francisco.
And what difference would it make if this ends up prevailing and the school board follows it, which is another question?
Well, yeah, because as we know, it's non-binding and it's just an advisory. But what it allows us to do, we would like for them to be a little bit more transparent in their dealings when it comes to the assignment process and just all school business, period. So we would like for them to, again, invite us to the table, and because we're no longer a minority, we're a majority voice now in the whole assignment process. So it can't just be the inner sanctum of the school speak people, such as the PPSs and the Parent Advisory Councils, they'll refer to as having all of these outreach groups and speaking to all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of parents. Well, after last night, it looked like 68,000 people have spoken.
Well, it's, of course, still very, very close.
Right.
But I want to bring in Rachel Norton, who was on Forum last week with Dave Iverson and talking about Proposition Measure H. Let's hear what she had to say. This is, of course, before the vote was known.
The whole process of choosing how students are assigned to schools and what supports achievement and all of these things is an extremely complex problem. It's the most complex problem I've ever worked on. And to say that a page-long ballot initiative could provide a simple solution that works better than something that the board spent months and years on, I think is just is false.
Omar Khalif, sounds like the school board president or board member, rather, is not inclined to pay attention to the message, assuming that it does pass. What recourse would you have?
Well, they wouldn't pay attention because they don't want to admit to they made an error in judgment and a mistake. So why would they want to retract what it is that they did? So, again, the people have now spoken. Again, if it passes or if it doesn't pass, we still are now a large and informed group, and we'll continue to chip away and knock at the door until we, the voters, the parents of the children who are creating the resources for the school district to function.
Okay.
So we'll just continue to go.
All right. Thanks so much, Omar Khalif, parent, co-chair of Families for Neighborhood Schools. David Lee, let me ask you a question, because last night when the absentee ballots were counted at the very beginning, Measure H was way ahead. And I'm wondering if you think that is a reflection of support for neighborhood schools in the Asian American community to some extent.
Well, we definitely saw a lot of editorial coverage in the Chinese language newspaper about neighborhood schools. And it's one of the hot topics because, as you may know from Census 2010 data, the Chinese community has a large percentage of the children in San Francisco, and they're consumers of the public school system. So this is an issue that they care deeply about and they've been following. And I think that many have voted on H.
Corey Cook, I don't know if that's a measure that you followed.
It is. I'm in the process of moving into the city, and I have a child who's going to be going to kindergarten. So I was pretty fascinated by this measure. What I think is interesting, though, is that the 135,000 people who voted, as the caller just mentioned, I mean, a lot of these are folks who don't have their kids in the schools. And so it's an interesting opinion poll, but I think the close division between people on this measure is actually precisely what the school board's saying. It's a factor, but it's not the only one. And I think actually it's hard to really read the tea leaves on a citywide vote where, you know, what, one in six people actually have kids in schools. Just to go from that to say the school board, now you must respond to what, you know, 50.7% of the population has said, I think is a difficult leap.
Another big issue on yesterday's ballot was pension reform, Proposition C and D. C was more of a consensus approach negotiated by the mayor with the unions, and it would have will apparently save up to $1.3 billion over 10 years with changes in pension contributions for employees and retirement ages and so on. That one passed overwhelmingly, 69% yes. And Prop D, which would have saved a little more money, overwhelmingly lost, 66% no. That one promoted by Jeff Adachi, the public defender and mayoral candidate, opposed by the unions. Any thoughts, Corey Cook, about that issue and how it played out?
Yeah, I think one is that even though Jeff Adachi's measure failed, I think he played an integral role actually in putting the measure B on the ballot last time and in sparking the sort of consensus that was on the ballot this time. So I think he does deserve some of the credit for actually, even though he lost last night, both his election and Prop
and burned some bridges in the process.
And burned some bridges. He was one of the driving forces actually behind C being on the ballot. I think the lesson for other cities here, though.
The reaction to D.
Exactly. I think one of the lessons here for other cities, though, I mean, there are a lot of different proposals in San Jose that are far more severe than this. I think one of the things is that you can actually have a process, this consensus process that involves labor and business and city leaders together. This is, I think, the start of another ballot measure because I think this barely scratches the surface. But I think the process was an interesting one.
All right. And let's bring in another voice now on this issue. Corey Marshall is a good government policy director with SPUR, San Francisco Planning and Urban Research here in San Francisco. Corey Marshall, good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And I believe your organization supported C, opposed D. Did you have any – how difficult a call was that? Because many people feel that Prop C really isn't going to resolve the problem.
Right. Yeah, it was actually a very difficult conversation for us internally. If you look back to last fall when Jeff Adachi's first measure was on the ballot, we actually had some internal strife over our support for that particular measure. But I think more importantly, just the fact that there are two measures on the ballot is really a public acknowledgement that this is one of the most important conversations that we can have right now. I mean, realistically, this has the largest financial impact of any measure on the ballot this year. You're talking about, Prop C has a potential savings of about $1.3 billion over 10 years, correct. So, I mean, what you're talking about essentially, if you prorate that down, is the equivalent of a parks department. So you're talking about savings that are about $130 million a year and can actually have a real direct impact on the provision of public services.
But does it solve the problem or does it just kind of, kick the can down the road, as we say?
I don't know if it kicks the can down the road. I mean, this is an important first step. And, I mean, just the fact that we've elevated the conversation to this point should be considered a significant victory. But I think we should acknowledge that this is a first step in a much broader conversation and that there's lots more work to be done.
Let me ask you about a couple of other things on the ballot, if I can. There were two bond measures, Prop A, the school bond, which passed overwhelmingly, was 71%, needed 55 to pass. And Prop B, $248 million for roads and sidewalks. That one passed with 68%, needed 66 and two-thirds. So it looks like that'll probably prevail. Those are two very different uses of bond measures, I would think, of bond money. What are your thoughts about those two ways of using a bond to pay for, some capital expenditures?
Right. Well, the school's bond, Proposition A, is a traditional way to use bonds. I mean, it's for core infrastructure needs. It's the third in a series of three bonds over the course of the last decade. And is really necessary to bring, in many instances, bring the facilities up to code, as well as to do some other improvements to equip classrooms to be more effective, for today's teaching. I think Proposition B was a little bit more difficult, to be honest with you, because I think, you know, while we traditionally support infrastructure funding through bond funds, this is one that a lot of folks would expect to be funded out of the general fund. But given the magnitude of the problems that that we've experienced through underfunding over the last decade, I think voters recognize that this is an important thing that needs to be addressed.
Corey Cook, San Francisco has a $6.8 billion budget, which is larger, I'm sure, than many states. And yet there isn't the money to pave the roads, which some feel is a pretty fundamental job of government. What does that say about priorities in San Francisco?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, the budget is ultimately the city's statement of its priorities. And I think, we could certainly spend a lot of time arguing about how the city ought to spend its money. And I think actually the other measure on the ballot that I found interesting, the sales tax measure, gets at the question of, you know, are there priorities misallocated, or is it frankly a revenue problem? And that we haven't allocated enough because we haven't raised enough revenue. And the sales tax revenue of the sales tax measure is interesting to me. You know, obviously San Francisco is a progressive city, but, you know, regressive sales taxes are bad. You know, 999 notwithstanding, sales taxes are bad taxes. They're regressive taxes. Historically, you know, sales taxes haven't done well, but at the same time, I think, you know, as Corey Marshall was saying, there's a realization that, you know, things like pension measures save parks departments, and there's a real, you know, $380 million budget deficit is a significant one. The failure to allocate funds to maintain your roads and so forth, I thought that might have actually done a little bit better than it did.
Yeah, David Lee,
I can tell you that's a very real issue. The failing infrastructure. Potholes, crumbling streets. I started a website in the Richmond as a part of a project for my class called Fix the Richmond. It's www.fixtherichmond.com. And residents have been emailing broken streets, broken potholes, broken street lamps, and we've been getting hundreds of inquiries and responses. This is a very real issue, and I think this is something that the next mayor should address, the failing infrastructure of San Francisco.
All right. Look, I guess we're not going to have a change of priorities to address deferred maintenance. Corey Marshall, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Spur this morning. Let's go to the phones now. Martin is on the line in San Francisco. Welcome.
Sorry, you say me?
Yeah.
Well, oh, hi.
Hi there.
Good morning. I have a question about ranked choice voting, going back to that
sure.
issue.
Uh-huh.
One problem, it seems, with the mechanics of the system is that the candidates who get the least support are the ones whose supporters get a second and third chance to vote.
That's an interesting observation. Corey Cook, certainly, you know, and some people tried to game it, I suppose, and voted indeed for people that they thought wouldn't win or couldn't win or
sure.
were unlikely to win, put them first, and then put their I don't know if it was their top choice, but the one most likely to win last.
Yeah, I think, you know, any voting system, there's some strategic voting or gaming that's possible, and there is some gaming that's possible in ranked choice voting. You'd have to have a lot of information about how it's going to turn out so that you would game it correctly. I just would say to the caller, you don't get second and third votes. I mean, it really is. You
one
allocate
vote.
Your preference, and it's one vote. But that is actually how a runoff works.
In a runoff, everybody gets a vote for one of the two finalists.
But presumably, if you're one of the two candidates who comes in the top two, you would still vote for them in the runoff, and those who voted for the other candidates would then have another opportunity to vote for one of those two. So
right, but under
it does simulate the runoff.
Yeah.
I would point out that in a runoff situation, there's an opportunity to coalesce, to build coalitions between the candidates who failed in the general election, which is denied in an instant runoff situation.
And if you vote for, say, and maybe this is what the caller was alluding to, but if you vote for the, say, three candidates who finish toward the bottom, you're not going to be a part of that final choice. Your ballot will be exhausted.
And that's something that I think a lot of people are going to be looking at, is the number of exhausted ballots in this election, because it's very conceivable that people will have gone to vote, voted for three candidates, did everything properly, only to see that their votes did not matter in the final rounds of voting, which I think is a real concern. Any system needs to help be held accountable.
I agree. If you're going to allow people to rank their preferences, they should have as many preferences as there are candidates. It doesn't make sense to artificially truncate that. I understand the law and I understand the systems and all that.
But then you'd have to have if you had equipment that only took 10 and you get 12 candidates.
Exactly right. I mean, we're not there yet in terms of what we can do. And at the same time, we have a lot of exhausted ballots because people are limited to only three choices.
Well, Yeah, and I would just add that any system should address flaws. And there are flaws with every voting system. And all we're doing is really calling out some of the flaws that we've observed and to see if we can start addressing them because they're very real.
Also want to point out, we didn't talk much here this morning about the sheriff's race, but that is the one race that clearly is going to be determined by ranked choice voting. Ross Mercurimi, the supervisor, is ahead after that first round of voting with 38%, followed by Chris Cunney, 28%, and Paul Miyamoto close behind the deputy sheriff with 27%. That's going to be interesting. And I don't know, David Lee, this is a there were two Asian Americans in that race, David Wong being the other. He got about 6.5% of the vote, Paul Miyamoto. Any thoughts about how that excitement that you talked about at the beginning among Asian American voters, how that could play out here?
Well, I certainly think that Paul Miyamoto in particular benefited from a large Asian American turnout, Chinese American turnout. I know he campaigned heavily in the Chinese community and was in the Chinese media quite frequently. And I think that his strong showing as a first-time candidate really speaks to a strong Asian turnout. However, this race is very close, and I think we won't know the results until perhaps today at 4 o'clock.
Corey Cook.
I think for those who are interested in ranked choice voting, you should really closely follow this race because it'll show you the dynamics of how those elections work. When David Wong is in fourth place, when his votes are reallocated, it could very well affect who's in second and third, which could ultimately determine the winner. My sense is that it would have a different outcome if the final two are Ross Mercurimi and Chris Cunney than it would be if the final two were Ross Mercurimi and Paul Miyamoto. And so the question of who's actually in second and who's in third, and there's very close.
Yes.
That'll be interesting. So I think as voters pay attention, I would spend a lot of time looking at the sheriff's race.
And of course, if Ross Mercurimi prevails, as does Ed Lee will have an appointment to the Board of Supervisors, which will set off a whole other round of speculation, no doubt. Final thoughts. We've got just a couple seconds left. Corey Cook, what are you going to be looking for other than the sheriff's race in the coming days here?
I think it'll be interesting to look. The city releases the ballot image data of how people voted. I think we'll be spending a lot of time looking, as David said, at voters and what they did and whether they fully ranked their choices and look at disparities at different communities by precinct. I think it'll be really interesting to study how that played out in this race.
All right. Thanks so much, Corey Cook, assistant professor of politics and director of the Leo McCarthy Center for Public Service at University of San Francisco.
Thank you.
I keep wanting to change your title, Corey. I apologize. And David Lee. From the Chinese American Voters Education Committee. Thanks to you as well and to all of our other guests who joined us this hour. Forum is produced by Kevin Gilrey, Judy Campbell, and Amy Machado. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.